Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth, every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. Welcome, I'm your host, Susan McCabe. Today is a very special day on Real Talk. We're going to get the backstory around the 26 portraits of black people killed by police violence that have graced many windows on Vashon Highway and are displayed currently in their entirety at Vashon Center for the Arts. Sometime in 2020, artist West McLean introduced what he calls the Vashon Remembrance Project, wherein he rendered these large and compelling portraits. West is with us today to tell us his story and some of those he's immortalized. Welcome, Wes.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with a quote that I found on your website, which I encourage everybody to see. It's vashonremembers.org. The quote is from W.E.B. Du Bois. "One is astonished in the study of history at the recurrence of the idea that evil must be forgotten, distorted, skimmed over. We must not remember that Daniel Webster got drunk, but only remember that he was a splendid constitutional lawyer. We must forget that George Washington was a slave owner and simply remember the things we regard as creditable and inspiring. The difficulty, of course, with this philosophy is that history loses its value as an incentive and example. It paints perfect men and noble nations, but it does not tell the truth." So, West McLean.
Yes. I can't follow that, by the way. Not sure what to say next.
Well, what motivated you to create this group of portraits of black people killed by police violence?
That's a long and complicated answer, but it comes down to not knowing what else to do. Feeling pretty powerless and knowing that I, first of all, speak from a place of privilege, but feeling quite powerless in what was going on in the summer of 2020. And Black Lives Matter had been around for several years before that, but with the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, everything really came to a fore. And that was, it was, and I'm speaking personally, of course, we had just moved to Vashon and everything was kind of a perfect storm of COVID and the Black Lives Matter protests and finding our footing in the community and being very, very isolated. And this was in May, June of last year, 2020. And I just started painting as a way to meditate about it. It sounds very privileged to say I was trying to find my peace by, consoling myself through painting and living in my living room and being isolated. But,
and I will note that you are a white guy.
I am a white guy.
Yes.
Yes. And this was a way for me to, express my feelings about what was happening and what was important to me. And that was, the face of George Floyd. It was the first one I painted. And I did not start the project with the intention of putting them all over town or having a collection in the breezeway at the Center for the Arts like it is now. These are all, so to speak, happy accidents. honestly, I'm very humbled by the reaction to it. I was not expecting it. In fact, my wife and I joke, I'm quite the introvert. And my wife is an extrovert. She is the first person to know people's names and introduce herself to the neighbors and mm-hmm. such. And when we were moving to Vashon, she had the idea that she would be the one getting out and about and meeting the community and meeting the movers and the shakers. And with the emergence of this project, I've learned a lot of names and a lot of faces, and have learned, a lot about the community and met business owners and such. So it sounds a little trite, but the real treasure was the friendships I made along the way.
Well, it certainly caught on. Did you ever imagine that you would end up doing 26 of these portraits?
If you had told me that I would be doing 26 portraits, I would have been immediately overwhelmed. so no, I did not. But it just continued and continued, and I waited. I think I was waiting for my steam to run out, and it just has not. And it's grown into other projects, and I've made a lot of other connections, and people who know my name from that project are inviting me to do a lot of other really cool things this year and next year, and I'm just very, very grateful. It's not something that I expected again.
Well, yeah, and I notice, and maybe these are what you're referring to, the other campaigns on your website include civil rights leaders, in addition to killed by law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in addition to that, I've been very fortunate to meet up with some people across the state. When the installation went up at VCA, someone came to the island. I believe actually it was on King 5 News.
Oh.
And they had seen, I remember that it was Valentine's Day for some reason, but they had seen the report about that installation and contacted the Center for the Arts and got my information. And it was this gentleman from Snohomish County named Michael, who runs Change the Narrative in Granite Falls. They do a lot of great work and a lot of anti-racist work and work in critical race theory and historical accuracy work, I want to say. And he reached out, and he and I have become friends and work together, and they do a lot of work with NAACP. So it's these tendrils of work and opportunity that have kind of spread out from Vashon. And I've, again, just been very, very fortunate to meet all these people and be exposed to so many great people doing work that I really admire.
With all this, I know you've chosen anonymity. Your real name is not West McLean.
No, it's not.
How do you, first of all, why do you prefer to remain anonymous? And secondly, how do you remain anonymous when you're making all these connections?
Well, there comes a point in every connection where I come clean and say, you know, you can call me by my real name, and that's okay. And it's not something that I'm actively trying to hide. So it's the analogy I use is, you know, if you wanted to know Jay-Z's name, you could very easily go on Wikipedia and find out his name is Sean, and that's fine. It's not something he's trying to hide.
Mm-hmm.
But it does put kind of a buffer between my personal life and what people think of me when they see these projects or when they go to the website. In a way, it gives me a lot more freedom to express myself because like I mentioned, I am an introvert and I hate Brussels sprouts, and there's all these, you know, personal details about myself that have nothing to do with what I want people to take away from these portraits. And I am a white guy, middle-aged white person. And so people have heard from us enough. So if I can remove my whiteness and my maleness and my cisgenderedness from this entire endeavor, that can only be a positive, because I want people to take away the message that it's not about me. It's not about the painting. It's about the people. And we had talked a little bit before about the idea of Sonder, and that's what,
yes,
what it really comes back to is.
And Sonder is a link on your website. Tell us more about that. Tell us more about Sonder.
I'm going to butcher the definition of Sonder, but it's a little known word, and I think I stumbled across it maybe 10 years ago on one of those image boards where it lists, you know, 15 words in the English language that are beautiful but nobody knows. And Sonder is the understanding or the realization that every person that you pass or encounter day to day, week to week, year to year, has a life that is as detailed and emotionally complex as your own. And you see yourself as the hero of your own story, but everyone is the hero of their own story. And having that realization really centers me. It's a the idea of being present for other people's stories.
And those stories are so interesting and so fascinating. In fact, that's one of the things Real Talk is about. But the whole idea that each individual is the protagonist in their own story, to my mind, amplifies that sense of our belonging to something so much larger than just our own story.
Right.
Let's go to the stories, though, that you have depicted in your paintings. How did you choose each of those 26 people? Which one stands out the most for you, and what was that research like?
Big questions. The first couple that I did were George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and they were top of every news cycle.
Yeah.
And that was the reason that those came about. And I started, actually, I was at a rally, I'm using air quotes, nobody can see it, but rally over here by the theater last year, last summer, I believe it was in May, maybe June. And there was a part of the rally where the speaker, I think it was my friend Chris, was reading the names and people in the audience were responding. It was a call and response, say their name type of thing. And I realized that I knew a few of the names, but a lot of the names I had no idea. So I went home and I looked up, and you can just Google say their names and you'll come up with lists of hundreds. And I realized that I didn't know a whole lot about all the, I don't want to call them martyrs because it was certainly not intentional that they were killed by law enforcement, but all these people, all these individuals, all these stories, all these faces that I just simply did not know and wanted to know and thought it was important that their memory and the fact that they had these full lives and these emotional intricacies and the likes and dislikes, and they went to a high school and they had best friends and they had a favorite cereal. These are all things that I really wanted to know about them.
Sonder,
exactly. And not to get too off of your question, but there's a great video that was really inspiring to me. It came out, I want to say 2018 or 2019, and it was called Before You Call the Cops. And I think I linked to it on my website. I'm not sure, but if not, I will, if I had forgotten that. and it's a black gentleman who's looking directly into the camera and speaking very deliberately, saying, before you call the cops, there are some things that you should know about me. I know every word to the musical Oklahoma. I hate bananas. Bananas are disgusting. I also know every word to Straight Out of Compton, I think he says. But he goes on, and it was really powerful because I also know, well, I don't know every word to Straight Out of Compton, but I know quite a few. So it's the sonder of what he was saying. These little details about his life really spoke to me. And I wanted that same intimacy to come out of the portraits. And that's where the QR codes came from. So people could see the portraits and scan a QR code with their phone and read these short snippets about these individuals and realize that they are people. And they, like I said, they have families, they have likes and dislikes, they had dreams before they were killed. So it's that type of sonder and humanity that I really wanted to be at the forefront. And that, I think that kind of best explains why I wanted anonymity, because I didn't want it to be about me. Because I can tell you that my likes and dislikes, but who cares? People have heard from middle-aged white men far too often.
Yeah. I kind of have to agree with that. Yeah.
Let's diversify a little bit here.
So that research must have moved you in some way, learning the stories of each of these individuals and how they lived before they passed.
Yeah. It was hard in some instances, and in some instances it wasn't. This is a terrible answer. what I'm trying to say is what I focused on with the research, and I was very deliberate on the website to say this person was killed by law enforcement.
Yes.
And not give details about that, because you can find that if you want to. You can, but that my entire purpose was to celebrate the life and to give details about the life. So the research that I did, I would get very excited when I found out, for instance, that Breonna Taylor loved Fruit Loops, or little things like that. Tamir Rice's favorite songs, and the fact that he had, I can't quite recall, but this or that sibling of this person, and all these small details that kind of collected together to form a life. Like these things, in that research, those little things kind of personally brought me a little bit of solace to know. There's another project, and I think you and I were talking about this maybe two, three weeks ago, where I was putting together an installation of these broken TVs. And if people know me on Facebook who are listening, I started getting tagged on a lot of broken TV posts. Like people would see a TV on the side of the road and tag me on it so that I can come get it. So I have this collection of TVs in a little outhouse on my property.
But that makes your wife happy.
Oh, she's thrilled about it. I was going to put on, without getting too technical, a virtual overlay of the TV that you could put your phone up to the TV and watch videos of police violence against a backdrop of What a Wonderful World playing. And it just... it got so, as you can imagine, it got very, very hard to do. So that research was, it's something that I'm still working through and trying to figure out whether or not I should do it, whether I should complete that installation.
Can you say what point it is you're trying to make with that?
Yes. And there is a facet of that project that that I didn't explain in the lead up, and that is you can tap on your phone and the music will still be there, but the background, all the images of police violence will change to, you know, a cheery, sunshiny cartoon. And the idea there is that you can ignore these things, but they're happening all the time. They're happening every day. And it's not a post-racial society ever since Barack Obama was made president. And we're not colorblind anymore. These, you know, white supremacy is alive and well, and you can ignore it, but you know that it's there in the background. So that was the whole point of that installation, which may or may not find a home on the island.
That's especially true if you're a black person. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington, and at voiceofvashon.org. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I am delighted to be speaking with Wes McLean, the creator of the Vashon Remembrance Project and many others. Again, I urge you to go to his website, vashonremembers.org. Wes, what were your predominant takeaways from the process of creating the Vashon Remembrance Project? What did you walk away with? And I know you've been saying a lot about white supremacy is alive and well. Were there particular stories that stuck with you more than the others?
There were. And I'm reticent to go into detail about the individual stories of the individuals that are depicted in the portraits, because I will certainly get something wrong. And this is probably being recorded.
The major takeaways
personally were connections to my community and what it means to do activist work or anti-racist work in a small community. And I mentioned it before, and not in quite so much detail, but it was kind of a perfect storm for me that Vashon and COVID and the racial unrest in 2020, which continues, it all culminated in this project for me, and making connections across the island and across the county and across the state that I never thought would ever happen. In terms of the project itself, it's been artistically, it's been quite a growing experience for me in the ways, how am I going to depict this person? How am I going to depict the glow in their eyes? Which of the several pictures of this other person am I going to choose to kind of encapsulate their humanity and want and make people want to know more about this person? I think the ones that are the ones that are most emotionally affecting to me are the kids, Tamir Rice and Jordan Edwards, and there are a couple of other
Trayvon Martin,
yes, the young people. It's just so hard. Especially, I'm a father myself. I have a 9-year-old at home. And so Tamir Rice was only 12 years old when he was gunned down. So these are things that really affect me. And I spend, poor me. I have to spend several hours looking at these portraits to paint them and then eventually put them up. And I'm being facetious, but speaking from a place of privilege, this is a way for me to process what's happening and also contribute to other people's understanding of what is happening.
And you've certainly done that. From an artistic perspective, it looks to me as though you started with photographs.
Yes.
Where did you go from there in the rendering process?
Well, I'm a big fan of high resolution photographs, and a lot of people who I've wanted to paint, I have not been able to paint just because I don't entirely know what they look like. And I want to, honor them in a way that is higher resolution than the one or two fuzzy images that I can find. So it's a question of research, trying to find high resolution photos and then manipulating those in Photoshop or Adobe Illustrator to apply filters and mess with the brightness and contrast in a way that gets it down to 3 or 4 main colors, blocks of colors. And then taking those and mapping them out on a massive canvas, which I paint on OSB, which is basically compressed plywood. And I do that because it's very cheap, or it used to be. Last year, it was very cheap.
Yeah. All that has changed.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have it laying around and, on their properties or on their barn, come pick up this old OSB that I don't need anymore. And then I have a free 4x8 canvas. So I will whitewash a big piece of plywood and then either project or map out the Photoshopped image and then spend a few days painting in all the shapes that come out of it.
And they are compelling. They are incredibly compelling for anyone who hasn't seen them yet. And I can't imagine if you live on Vashon Island that you haven't seen them. But if you're visiting Vashon Island, drive by the Vashon Center for the Arts. Their breezeway is filled with these all 26. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, I think they have 26 of the 30 total. I think there's 4 others in town currently.
And how is this Vashon Remembrance Project different from other projects that you're working on?
A lot of the projects that I have been invited to work on are because of, I suppose, name recognition and, recognition of the VCA project, and also some volunteer work that I did last year with the schools, and people I've met along the way. I'm working with, Peter Serco on his World AIDS Day project, and we're going to be, working with island high schoolers to develop their own artwork and talk about the history of activist art. Props to Peter. He let me borrow this amazing book that talks about activist art throughout the AIDS epidemic in the 80s and the way that activist artists actually spurred change by creating and releasing all this art. And it's just, it's fantastic. And it's just an amazing story. So we're hoping to tell that story to high schoolers and embolden them to create their own activist art. So things like that, where I've made that connection. I think I met Peter through Chris, and Peter and I just started talking about what we could do. So it gives me, it's really great to have those opportunities to give back to the community. And in meeting all these people and collaborating as much as I do, it just makes me feel like this is my home now, which is great.
Well, Vashon Island has certainly embraced you as an active member and a welcome member of our community. When you started this, though, I mean, you moved to Vashon just as the pandemic started. You must have known the demographics. It was a pretty white island. Did that have anything to do with your choice on this project?
The choice of the project or the choice to move here?
Well, the choice of the project.
We did not move here because of the demographics, but we knew how liberal the island was just from visits and such. And it did not, I didn't start the project with the intention to put the paintings anywhere. In fact, for a month or probably 6 weeks or so, I just had 10 paintings hanging out in my living room. So by the time that we had coordinated with local businesses and I started seeing them in windows, it was like seeing a piece of your furniture in someone else's house because I just saw these portraits in my home every day. And then I started seeing them everywhere. So, I didn't ever intend, well, I don't want to say ever. I didn't start it with the intention of, for instance, having an installation at VCA or them being seen at all. So it's not something that I pursued because of the whiteness of the island. And in fact, the whiteness of the island has become apparent to me within this project. And that just goes along to needing to further educate myself.
Yeah, weren't some of your paintings vandalized?
Yes. I was actually out of town both times that happened. So it wasn't me. but I received calls about that. And there was a painting that was ripped off of the wall at VCA and kind of almost snapped in half. And we were able to repair that. And then just down the street here at Urban Bloom, somebody threw something through a window at one of the paintings that is still over there at Urban Bloom. Props to Kara and Amy over there for putting that right back up. And it was each time that happened, it just emboldened me. I want to say that each time a painting was messed with, it spurred like 3 additional paintings. So, I spoke with VCA and I spoke with Urban Bloom right after that happened, and made sure that they were still comfortable housing this. And just like invariably the community is always just incredibly supportive, and would like to see more faces and learn more stories. And, that's really empowering to me.
And to the rest of us. And I like to remind myself and our fellow Vashonians that we like to think of ourselves as special and perfect, but we are really just a microcosm of the rest of the world. And so when paintings of Black people get vandalized, it's another reminder that we're not that special.
Yes. There are always things to work on. There's always more to learn.
Right.
So yeah, it is a great reminder to simply keep going and keep growing.
Wes McLean, I cannot thank you enough for joining me here on Real Talk today, and I can't believe we're already out of time.
So that was a fast 29 minutes.
Yes,
but thank
was.
You very much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here, and thank you, dear listener, for joining me and Wes McLean here on Real Talk every Tuesday at lunchtime, where curiosity chases truth for 28 minutes. Thank you for listening.